Hey, Anna, have you been catching black hole fever?
Oh, yeah.
It has been
Terminal case.
sweeping the nation. I mean,
Sweeping
from
the
that
nation.
first picture that came out the other week. So I was trying to think back of when was the first black hole ever detected? When was the
Not
first
photographed, because this is the first photograph.
That's right. So detected. Well, that's
You're
one
gonna tell
called,
me, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I think I'm prepared for this time for once. This is a black hole with the code name Cygnus X1.
Ooh.
I know, it sounds like a old like sci-fi movie series or something. Like Cygnus X1 was
I'd
this
watch it.
Place you would?
Oh yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, this was found in 1964.
Okay.
They were investigating these mysterious X-rays that were coming from out of the constellation of Cygnus, and lo and behold, they end up finding a black hole there.
What?
So this is one that is a little closer to us than the one that was photographed. In fact, a lot closer to us. It's only 6,000 light years away. That's still really far.
Practically a hop.
Yeah, it's not even in the neighborhood, but it's a mere 15 solar masses. So you take the mass of the sun times 15, shrink it down into a very small area, you get yourself a black hole.
Okay, cool.
And so whenever you look up in the constellation Cygnus, that's the one that looks like a northern cross. There's a black hole in there. Does that scare you?
I'm just not going to look at it. I'm not going to think about it. Just in case it starts creeping
no,
closer.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
Oh, okay. It makes me nervous, but okay.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we are both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I'm here to keep his feet on the ground. In this episode, we're joined by reporter Nathaniel Sharping from Astronomy and Discover magazines. Black holes are the topic du jour, if you will. And, you know, I'm very big on women in STEM, and there's a great convergence here, because one of the people that did a lot of the work on the black hole is a woman named Katie Bauman. She, like, wrote a bunch of code. Amazing. Incredible. Great picture.
Oh, yeah.
Good job, her.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge story. Like, you know, when this came out, this was a surprise to everybody. Like, I wasn't ready for this.
You didn't have the insiders at NASA, like, hitting you up?
They weren't calling me up ahead of time.
Phone?
Yeah, this was like, out of the blue. Because, I mean, I would have even thought, like, this is impossible.
You
know, this is not possible to get this. And the black hole that they photographed was not anything nearby us. Like, I thought, okay, they're going to see one in our
local
neighborhood.
Maybe it's more photogenic.
It is. It must be photogenic.
They're like, you know, you don't have a great side one in Cygnus, but we're going to go to the one that has that can really looks great, pops on camera.
That's right. You got to have a good silhouette, you know, you got everything like that. So so this was the big story was this black hole in the galaxy called M87. This is one of the biggest galaxies around. I mean, with trillions of stars in it. The Milky Way has hundreds of billions of stars, but this is a galaxy way, way bigger than the Milky Way.
Okay.
And so why that black hole in that spot you know, this is something like 53 million light years away. And that Cygnus X1 black hole is only 6,000 light years
away. So much closer. It must be really ugly.
It's hiding its face.
Nope.
It's hiding its face.
Really?
And so this picture, the why it's so hard to get pictures of black holes, well, it's frankly because what color is space?
Black.
Right. And black holes are?
I know it's going to be a test.
Black. And so you can't see them very well. completely invisible. So how we could detect this was, well, we know there's a giant mass there, this humongous thing that stuff is circling around. And so finally we get this picture. And the way that they did it was they connected telescopes from around the world. This is called.
Well, I kind of like that, like collaborative approach.
Exactly, exactly. So the astronomers that are writing all this computer code, they're connecting these telescopes on various parts of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at the same object, M87, at the same time, and using the combined powers of all those telescopes together. This is what's so cool.
Oh, that is cool.
So it's like using one gigantic telescope, almost the whole size of the Earth.
Whoa.
And that's what let us see this thing. And so what it turns out, this black hole is not just some little rinky-dink thing. This is...
It has managed to impress Dean Regas.
It
so
is.
It's huge.
And I am very hard to impress with black holes. I think the whole idea of black holes uh-huh. seems very boring. It's like, yeah, okay, it's a black hole. But this one got me. Like, finally.
Really?
Finally, the breakthrough happened.
You were excited.
Yeah.
Can I just point out, I know, not to be a downer, it was a little blurry.
So you're not impressed by the resolution.
I was very impressed by the whole thing. I'm still reeling, obviously, but I just wanted to point out. But it is 53 million light years away. Light years away, so I guess they get a pass. It's not like a selfie that you take.
That's right. Starbucks. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the first one. We'll let the, you know, picture this is the first digital picture you ever took. Your first ever selfie. This is the resolution on this from 1998 or
that's
whatever.
That's fair. And one of those disposable cameras or something.
That's like, right. This is, that's
yeah.
right.
Okay. So, but, you're right. I'm
but
being rude.
What comes back from this picture is this gigantic object. I mean, this thing is bigger than our whole solar system. So we're not just talking like a sun or talking a few suns. This is the equivalent mass of 6 billion of our suns in one spot. And it's so massive that not even light can escape it. So you fall in. I know it
you're
is.
You're staying there.
You're staying there. And
so is that what that little sort of crown around it is?
Yeah. So that the edge of that picture, the edge of the black hole there, that's what's called the event horizon.
Uh-huh.
That's the point of no return. So everything else around there is circling around that very fast, almost at the speed of light.
Uh-huh.
And that we captured that that light was just so incredible. And then the width of this thing. Yeah. I mean, you could fit 5 of our solar systems inside of it. So
okay. Let me just real quick. I'm sorry. Were you going to say something else?
No, I'm just louding this thing.
Because this is start my head. I'm starting to go off on a little bit of a fear spiral. I think we should just go ahead and stop it right now. So let me ask you, is it like just sitting there or is it like sucking stuff into it?
Well,
I need to know really quick right now.
It is. You didn't see the sign that has on it says,
yeah, it's like, stay
Anna,
away.
I'm coming for you.
Sorry. In my nightmares, I will.
Right.
Thank you.
That's right. You should say, I'd like to see you come 53 million light years and come get me.
And then it'll be like, on my way. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm just kidding.
Well,
I'm going 6,000 miles from us too now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so everything in space is moving. So nothing's just sitting still.
Great.
But this is a galaxy so far away, it's not influencing the Milky Way at all. So this is not.
It's not going to suck us into it.
We're going to die. No.
Will I get Wi-Fi in the black hole if I do get sucked in?
No, you definitely will not get Wi-Fi in it. So that's even worse.
Now I'm really worried.
Yeah. But this is hopefully the first of many, many that they're going to find in this way. And what was so cool is that light that you're seeing has been bent around space. So it's not like that light is just sitting there. This is light that's like bending around this gigantic object as it's like shifting light and time and space and all that. Mm. And so hopefully we're going to get even better pictures of closer ones. And maybe we can go for the one inside our galaxy.
Because that seems like low-hanging fruit at this point.
Exactly. It's the center of our galaxy, about 20,000-30,000 light years away. And it has a name called Sagittarius A star.
Hmm.
And so we don't have a name for this black hole yet.
Oh, yes, I was saying, when are we going to name it?
I don't know. Do you have any ideas of what we should call it?
Well, don't put me on.
Put you on the spot. I know.
Blacklemore?
Blacklemore. Yeah, that sounds fun.
I think we should mix pop culture references. In fact, I was going to ask you to scale this for me in my language on a pop culture scale, but I realize that you won't have any frame of reference because you are not pop culture. Mm. I'm sorry. It's not your thing.
This would be like...
You seem pumped, though.
I would say 5 Chuck Berries. That's what I'll give you on this one. That's what I'd say.
The only reason you said Chuck Berry is because they sent one of his songs in the space, didn't they?
That's true. That's right. Like, Johnny B. Goode's out in space, too.
God.
So.
Okay. Well, I'm excited about it for you.
Is that...
Scared, but...
That makes sense? 5 Chuck Berries?
It's perfectly equatable to your...
It's that big of a story.
Great job.
Last month's release of the first photo of a black hole made international news and generated a lot of interest in how it was taken and what was learned. Reporter Nathaniel Sharping covered the Event Horizon photo for Astronomy Magazine and Astronomy.com, and he's joining us now to talk about it. Thanks so much for joining us, Nate.
Yeah, of course. Glad to be here.
Well, of course, the big news is black holes, and we have that brand new picture that came out. And so we were wondering, you know, what is it that's so appealing and so fascinating to the public about black holes?
Well, I think a lot of things. I mean, I suppose maybe I can just speak for myself, but I've always been fascinated by how we really don't know about them, you know? And a big part of that is because we can't actually see them. And because there's, you know, there's a lot of fascinating things out there in the universe, I think, right? You know, neutron stars, magnetars, galaxies. But, you know, a black hole is kind of a different category. It's something that we think exists. You know, scientists have theorized them for a long time. And we definitely got a hint of them when we found the existence of gravitational waves back, you know, a few years back. But this is, we hadn't really known that they existed up until now. And that, I think just that, the allure of the mysterious is a big part of why people are so fascinated by them. And then there's also just the fact that they're so powerful, you know, the nothing can escape from them. It's a region where physics as we know it might conceivably break down. It's something that, you know, scientists think doesn't even really have any surface. You know, it's a singularity. It's not anything that we can even really kind of imagine inside of our heads. It's something we have to talk about in the abstract, you know. So I think that mysteriousness combined with just the overwhelming force, that gravitational pull that's so strong that, you know, nothing can escape. You know, we don't often get to talk about things in absolutes, you know, in the world of science in the real world, but, you know, about black hole truly is so powerful, so immense that nothing can escape from it.
So Nate, tell us a little bit about how you got into the topic of black holes.
Well, I'm an assistant editor for Discover Magazine, which is a general interest science publication. So we do talk about black holes, you know, fairly often. But the company that owns Discover also owns Astronomy Magazine. And so we've been doing a lot of coverage in partnership with them. And I have to say black holes isn't necessarily my specialty. I've covered them in the past in the course of my science writing. But
I don't know, Nate. You seem like the black hole whisperer to me. I mean, all the articles I've read, it seems like you got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be frank, the HT got me thinking a lot more about them. And, you know, specifically, I'm assuming you guys saw them, but I was looking into the history of illustrating black holes and how people have chosen to represent them. And, you know, that was interesting to me because it's a bit of a paradox, you know, trying to illustrate the unseeable. And the way that artists have chosen to go about that, I think is interesting. What I did learn is that, you know, most of those black hole pictures that you might see, at least prior to this picture, are kind of fanciful. You know, I think the typical one is kind of a black sphere floating on a swirling cloud of gas. And that, you know, that's, I guess it gets at some of the concepts, but it's not actually what you would see, you know. For one, the gravitational pull around a black hole is so strong that it would actually warp the light coming from what's called the accretion disk. That's the swirling cloud of gas that you see in a lot of those pictures. That's the material being drawn into a black hole, and the pull is so strong there that it heats that gas and dust up until it's releasing just a ton of energy, you know, light and all across the electromagnetic spectrum. But if you were actually near a black hole, that's not, you know, you wouldn't see just kind of like a whirlpool. You'd see something much closer to what we saw in the movie Interstellar, where there's kind of two rings, a vertical one and a horizontal one. And that's because the light coming from the accretion disk will actually be bent up and over the black hole. And the same thing will happen on the bottom too. The light coming from the back of the accretion disk will be bent underneath the black hole. And so you'll end up seeing what looks like two rings there kind of crossing each other, but it's actually just the same one. That's just light being bent.
So you mentioned the movie Interstellar there, Nate, and I have to ask you, is that your favorite movie about black holes? Because there's been several, surprisingly.
Well, there's Disney's The Black Hole. And Event Horizon
which I think got panned.
Yeah, but let's see what Nate says.
Yeah. So did you feel like that was your favorite? Do you have any thoughts? I mean, just saying.
Well, I guess there's two ways to come at that, from the scientific and the artistic angles. I should say, actually, I haven't seen a lot of those movies about black holes. I have seen Interstellar, and I have to say I did love it. Like a really great movie, and the, you know, the science was fairly on point. You know, I know they worked with Kip Thorne, the one of the scientists who actually won a Nobel Prize for discovering gravitational waves a few years ago, and he helped them kind of nail down their image of the black hole and also kind of what might happen should we cross the event horizon. I should say that the interstellar black hole isn't actually totally accurate. The director, Christopher Nolan, took a few artistic liberties when he was, you know, portraying it. As he saw it, as he has it in the movie, you know, we're seeing it from the right, even with the accretion disk. And in the movie, it looks like it's kind of equally bright on both sides, which actually isn't quite accurate, because all the material spinning around the black hole in the accretion disk, it's going so fast that what's called the Doppler effect will come into play. And that's, we might be most familiar with it when an ambulance goes by us. You know, the siren will kind of be at a higher frequency when it comes toward us and a lower frequency as it moves away. And that's because as it comes toward us, the sound wave is kind of, you can add the ambulance's speed to that, and as it moves away, it's kind of stretching out those sound waves as it's moving away. And the same thing happens with the light waves coming from the accretion disk around a black hole. So those on the side where they're rotating toward us will actually appear much brighter, and those going away from us will be a lot dimmer. And that's something that you didn't see in Interstellar, but you actually can see in the photo that the Event Horizon Telescope took, where if you look on the bottom edge of it, it's actually a lot brighter, and that'll be due to the Doppler effects of the material spinning around the black hole.
Well, and that's what I was wondering about, is this picture that we got. It seems like almost dead on to some of these artistic renderings, and so were there any big surprises from the picture?
You know, not for me, at least. I know one of the articles I wrote prior to the actual picture being released included a simulation by a scientist working with the EHT team, and it looks almost dead on.
It is. It's exactly the same picture. I mean, it's like a drawing. I mean, that was so cool. It was just like days before the actual picture.
And I mean, I think it's really cool in that it says that our scientists know what they're doing, right? If the black hole picture had looked really, really different, it would mean that we had somehow fundamentally misinterpreted the laws of physics. And the fact that we were able to simulate it so accurately means that, you know, we actually do have a pretty good idea of what's going on there. I guess it might have been cooler to us as the public if it had looked really, really crazy or something. But what it does say is that it kind of confirms our basic understanding of the universe.
Well, Nate, this has been a lot of fun talking about this, and thanks so much for joining us today and talking black holes.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me.
So once upon a time, a TV host somewhere said that kids say the darndest things. That's before my time, obviously. But that's definitely true. We know it's true. We work at the observatory. There's kids in and out asking questions.
All the time.
All the time. And we have a good one for today that's very topical, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it's a question that, as a 37-year-old woman, I want to know the answer to as well. And that is, what happens when you fall into a black hole?
First off, you're 37. I was picturing you about 29.
So. Oh, Dean.
Now to your question.
Oh, whatever you say sounds great.
That's what I thought. So what happens to you when you fall into a black hole? Whether you're 29 or 37 or 6.
It doesn't matter.
You're in big trouble. That's for sure.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's the one thing about Interstellar that I'm surprised Nate didn't mention they got wrong. Matthew McConaughey was not going to make it through that black hole. No, I mean, he's a goner.
He's a national treasure.
I understand. That's why I didn't want him to go in the first place.
I have to watch this movie now.
Yeah. It's good.
Is it really?
Now, so what really happens if you fall into a black hole is death. That is for sure.
Really?
Yes. Now, depends
that's worse than no Wi-Fi, is what you're saying.
Correct. That would be the least of your worries in there. So what happens is, well, if you're close enough, you have to be very close to black holes because they aren't usually gigantic, other than, of course, the one we just talked about. Well, yeah. But in general, they're not very large, and so they don't take up a lot of space. You have to be very close to one to fall in. But if you fall in, I would recommend feet first. That's my personal preference, because as you go in, your feet will be pulled more than your head because of the gravitational forces. Uh-huh. So your feet will detach from your body.
Oh, my God.
And then you'll turn into a very long strand, and astronomers even have a word for it.
Are you kidding me? Is it like string cheese?
Called spaghettification.
Spaghettification.
Yes, you will be turned into a long piece of spaghetti.
There are children listening, Dean.
Well, I'm telling them spaghetti this for their own harm. Good. They're going to need to know this someday.
Stay away from black holes, kids.
When the black hole comes.
Stay away from drugs and black holes.
That's right.
In that order. But
so
yeah.
That's why I say go feet first, because then you can watch your feet disappear into the black hole, and you're out there saying, whoa, man, this is some deep stuff. And your feet fall in, then your legs fall in, then your torso falls in, then your head falls in. After that, you're gone.
That's it.
That's it.
You become a noodle.
So then astronomers are debating, so what happens to that when you fall into the black hole? Do you go somewhere? Do you travel? Are you transported to a different universe? Are you transported to a different part of the universe? Or are you just there? And so that's the thing. Is the black hole a portal? Is it a thing that can take you somewhere? Or is it an actual physical object
that you like a bag or something?
It's like a black planet, basically. Yeah. And so are you there when you fall onto the black hole, or do you transport somewhere else? I like that idea of you go somewhere else in another universe and
somewhere
all your spaghettified parts.
Say, where there's marinara?
Right, your spaghettified parts are out there. I mean, either way. I, of course, as
you
being the non-romantic type person, I think when you fall in a black hole, you're in the black hole. You're crushed. You can't get out. You can't send signals out. Light won't escape.
Thanks for sending the question, kids.
That's right.
This is great. Could you not have put a rosy spin on it? This is children.
Oh, they love it, too. I mean, they love thinking about it.
Well, kids do. You actually said that they do ask you this a lot.
This is one of the top five questions I've had ever is what happens when you go into a black hole. And, like, the kids in the know, they're like, talk about spaghettification.
Are you serious?
Yeah. They love it. I mean, so it's like the best word. You know?
They're not like, oh, sorry I asked. They're like,
No, there's a certain morbidity to today's youth, you know, that I think is...
they're a little jaded.
Yeah. And you know, the good news, so the rosy thing...
Oh, yeah. Let's end on an up note.
We are never going to be swallowed up by a black hole.
You said they move. I just heard you say
they do move, but they are so far away. I mean, we couldn't fly to one if we wanted to. We can't...
Now you're
tempting
fate.
We can only see them from very far away. Like, oh, so God. Yes, so that is the good news. We will not die from black hole coming to swallow up the solar system.
And that's the real takeaway here.
That's what we want people to
Love it. Okay, well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks again to Nate Sharping for joining us. You'll find a link to his stories on the black hole photo on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
We're about to celebrate our second anniversary. Woo!
So exciting.
And if you've been listening from the start or are new to Looking Up, we'd sure love to hear from you with topic or guest ideas, space questions, or whatever's on your mind. Hit us up by email at lookingup@wvxu.org or on Facebook or Twitter.
Parents, we hope you'll share Looking Up with your kids, regardless of their interest in the morbidity of the questions they might be asking, and send us any questions they have. And if you're a teacher, we'd also love to hear from you and your students about space, planets, black holes, spaghetti, whatever. Drop us a line at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.